Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. It has been an eventful couple of weeks in financial markets with important economic data releases, updated views on the Federal Reserve's intentions, the start of earnings season, and the escalation of tensions in the Middle East. So joining us for the conversation on this Monday morning to provide some insight into all of these issues and what they mean for the market outlook, glad to welcome back Jason Dreho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, I know it has been a couple of weeks since we last spoke, so welcome back. It's great to be with you here on this Monday morning to embark on another week.
Well, thank you, Dan. It's good to be back. It's been a few weeks, and it does seem like some of the market narratives have changed quite a bit based on the data, political events, so a lot to discuss this morning.
Absolutely. So, Jason, to begin, I think to set the stage, can you talk a little bit about what has happened in the markets over the past couple of weeks and maybe speak to the factors that have been driving this performance we've been seeing?
Well, first off, if we think about what happened in the first quarter, it was strong performance across most asset classes. You know, with the equities up, U.S. equities up high single digits, we saw muted returns in fixed income largely because the spread compression was offset by higher rates. Commodities had done well. So a good first quarter, and the first 2 weeks of the second quarter hasn't unwound it, but it's been a little bit more negative and challenged. When we put it in context of what's kind of gone on more recently, I'd say over the past month or so, across different asset classes, the performance looks a lot like a silver inflation trade. By that, I mean a trade in which it's predicated on both growth and inflation either rising or staying kind of relatively elevated. So things that have done well just in the past few weeks, gold, energy stocks, industrials have done relatively well against them tied to more of a global cycle. Break-even inflation expectations have done well. Bitcoin has done well. So things that are kind of consistent with a bit of a reflation dynamic, that is has done kind of relatively well. It's also meant that bond yields have risen, and which is why, for the past couple weeks, bond returns have been, negative, because they've been rising on the prospect of sustained higher growth and inflation. So that's sort of, the key kind of dynamic that's really, impacted the markets the past couple weeks as we've gotten, March data. We'll talk about more about that in a minute. The other element is the geopolitical risk factor, with the escalation of between, Israel and Iran, that looked like it could have, been worse over the weekend. Things have kind of calmed down a little bit, but that certainly caused, volatility to spike, a bit of risk off sentiment in the markets. The cost of, buying downside protection, has gone up as volatility has gone up. Again, that is moderating a little bit this morning. The other thing I'd sort of finally end on is that if you look across this, a lot of, challenges, for the markets with economic data, especially inflation being harder than expected, impacting the Fed outlook, these geopolitical matters, you'd think these would be challenges for equity markets after a very strong run. Yet what we've seen is the markets have had a hard time selling off. It's a lot of not even 2% down, which in the past we've had days where the market's going to be down 2 to 3%. Investors are kind of buying the dip, but they're also not seem to be kind of selling out of positions. So it kind of speaks to the overall sort of resiliency and still, I think, relatively positive outlook for the markets overall, given how the markets performed in light of some of the more recent challenges they faced in the past couple of weeks.
So, Jason, you mentioned the economy. There has been some upside surprises in both growth and inflation data. Even this morning, I see we had a higher than expected jump in retail sales. So what exactly does that say about the state of the economy, and how does it perhaps alter the outlook?
Well, if we think of the economy as both the growth outlook and the inflation side of the story, the growth piece is continuing to come in quite resilient for the U.S. economy. That began in the past couple weeks with the March payrolls data surprising to the upside. And it looks like if you take a three-month kind of moving average, that payrolls have actually started to pick up in terms of hiring growth over the past few months. In addition to that, you alluded to the retail sales this morning. Beat expectations for March, but February was also revised higher. Instead of a core control group of retail sales exceeded expectations. So there's a little bit of a pullback at the start of this year in January. Even to February, to some extent, we saw some retail sales be a little bit soft. That could have been the case of a moderation after a strong fourth quarter. And now as we move into the spring, we're seeing retail sales pick up. So again, the consumer is spending. In addition, now we've seen the ISM Manufacturing Index pick up. And globally, the manufacturing cycle signs of inflecting a little bit higher. At least it looks with some confidence we can say the trough is in. So from a broad economic perspective, things are looking quite well. There's no indications of the economy kind of slowing down very much at all in the near term. So it's kind of consistent with our view that growth will be at or even above trend for much of this year. So that's the good macro story. The offsetting part of this is that inflation also continues to run hot. We know that in January, the numbers far exceed expectations. We got a little bit of moderation in February. The hope was that we'd start to see March inflation moderate even more, so we could say that the January was a bit of a one-off due to perhaps, annual seasonal adjustments that take place at the beginning of the year. The March data, really makes it hard to say that was the case. There wasn't a lot of great news in it. The fact is the three-month annualized non-shelter core service inflation, which is probably the stickiest part, the most labor market sensitive, that now on a three-month basis is up to 8%. It was below 4% just 3 months ago. So it would suggest that perhaps inflation is accelerating higher. I think I would take a little bit more glass half full perspective on this inflation data. If you think of core goods or goods inflation that's still coming down, core CPI ex shelter inflation is actually down to 2.4%. Core CPI with shelter, the full deal, is 3.8%. So it speaks to how much shelter is still elevated, yet real-time rent indicators point to further shelter disinflation. So it suggests that core numbers will continue to come down as the year goes on. Another thing that gives me some confidence that inflation will moderate, or not accelerate, is that most measures of wage growth, whether it's average hourly earnings that comes out with payrolls, the Atlanta Fed wage tracker, which tries to look for sort of like-for-like changes, the employment cost index, which is quarterly data, it's the broadest measure of kind of total compensation for workers, and other measures as well, they're all continuing to kind of going lower. We haven't seen for wage data this sort of stickiness or flatlining as we've seen for both headline and core CPI for the past 4, 5, 6 months. The wage data is continuing to go lower. Now, that doesn't guarantee that we're going to see price disinflation, but it really kind of rules out any kind of talk of a wage price spiral, and it makes inflation reacceleration much less likely if the labor market can use to kind of cool. So bottom line is that the disinflation is still likely to continue this year. I think inflation risk is overstated, but the disinflation path is going to be kind of slow and bumpy, and it's certainly the risks that were wrong on that have gone up based on what we've seen in the first quarter of this year. So bottom line is we have a U.S. economy that is not cooling much at all. Growth is strong, inflation is strong, and it certainly gives us confidence that the macro will be relatively resilient and supportive for the markets this year, provided that inflation doesn't get worse, and there's at least some gradual improvement throughout the year.
As far as how this translates to the Fed accounting for that macro outlook you shared with us, Jason, what does it mean for your outlook for Fed rate cuts here in 2024?
Well, our expectation prior to the CPI data was that the Fed would cut three times this year, starting in June. We've now revised that to two cuts beginning in September. So we've taken out one cut, which is consistent with what the market is pricing is also down to actually less than two cuts this year. There is certainly debate in the market whether that is still reasonable or is it possible that the Fed may not cut at all. There's certainly views out there that would suggest the Fed may not cut. And given the political, the election calendar, there's some thought that the Fed doesn't want to be doing the starting rate cuts right as the election is kind of getting close. So if they're not able to cut until September, they may rather wait and just all the way until December before doing any cuts. So there is that element to it. I think the key point, though, when I think of the Fed's kind of objectives and their communication thus far, not only recently but over the past year plus, is that given its sort of dual mandate of full employment and price stability, the Fed is still kind of biased towards cutting rates this year. Any signs of weakness in the labor market, or if inflation does start to kind of trend lower again, that gives the Fed justification for cutting rates. While if inflation stays sticky, the economy doesn't slow down, the labor market doesn't sort of weaken any further, all the Fed has to do is kind of further take out rate cuts this year and even into next year. It doesn't have to lead to more rate hikes. I mean, that's a small possibility, but I think the default right now is that it would just further delay rate cuts. So that means there's an asymmetry. Either they're inflation stays where it is and the Fed doesn't cut, or inflation follows the labor market rules and they do cut. So, the expectation is that then therefore they will be cutting given the different probabilities you'd apply to those scenarios. And the Fed, various officials have kind of said as much, over the past few weeks, even before the inflation data. That might sort of soften a little bit given where the inflation data is, but, I think their bias is towards cutting. Something else that got a little bit lost last week is the FOMC minutes. In light of the inflation news, this has kind of probably fallen under the radar. The key point in there is that the Fed is really kind of reaffirming their view that they're going to start tapering their quantitative tightening, meaning they're going to allow fewer bonds to roll off their balance sheet every month. It's likely this will be previewed in the May meeting and then actually implemented started in June. This is de facto easing because it means they're not tightening policy as much. They're trying to slow that down. So I think from a market narrative perspective, you can say that clearly the Fed is moving in that direction. It's just a matter of the sequencing and timing of all these things. So I think for the markets, the overall kind of key point that is, well, we're taking out rate cuts, and we think about the start of the year, it was upwards of almost 7 cuts were implied at some point back in mid-January. Now we're down to less than 2. That's happening because growth isn't slowing down very much, so we don't necessarily need those cuts. That they were kind of an option to begin with. But losing those cuts is not the same thing as losing the Fed's put, meaning the Fed's willingness and ability to cut rates if necessary. I think that's the key thing. So as long as the economy is holding up and inflation and the labor market isn't softening, there's no real reason for the Fed to cut. That's also not necessarily a reason then for the markets to want to sell off because, the economy is doing well. So while the Fed outlook has altered, I think from the market perspective, it doesn't necessarily change dramatically. I think what we would think of is a Fed that is still biased to being, supportive for risk assets this year rather than being a headwind at this point in time. And that would only change if inflation actually does reaccelerate.
Based on all of these macro policy as well as geopolitical developments, what should investors be thinking about and doing right now in their portfolios?
Well, I think the number one thing is in the past couple of weeks, kind of a reminder of this, is that you need to have a diversified portfolio, get in balance, think about having diversification across different asset classes, whether it's bonds, equities, even to some extent commodities have done well. So that's, again, sort of a reminder that, things can be looking good and they can change very quickly. The market narrative can change very quickly. That said, I think our overall investment outlook hasn't fundamentally changed. Now, we still think within fixed income, buying quality is the way to go. And now with the 10-year yield getting close to 4.6%, like over 4.5%, this is not a bad time to be also locking in some of those yields. They can drift higher, but similar to what we had last year, in the fall when they go all the way up to 5%, that's a pretty attractive opportunity to enter into some of these kind of longer duration, high quality fixed income. So you can get pretty good yield without taking a lot of risk. In terms of equity and market performance, we have seen it sort of broaden out this year even more than it was last year. It's not a Mag 7 story. In fact, some of the Magnificent 7 stocks have actually down year to date. So we've seen this broadening out of performance. This ties into the reflation trade that I alluded to earlier with things like energy and industrials doing well. So we do see opportunities outside of the tech sector. That is still one of our most preferred sectors, but we see opportunities within healthcare. We still like small caps. They've taken a bit of a hit recently because of the rise in rates, but ultimately I think if rates are directionally going to go lower from here, as disinflation, plays out and the Fed is able to cut, that is a tailwind for small caps. And then we see opportunities, outside of the U.S. as well to kind of, play off some of these themes, whether it is a Magnificent 7 in Europe or kind of Asian titans that are also kind of tied to the the AI, narrative overall. So the overall level of markets may stay range bound for the time being, but there's certainly opportunities within equities that investors should be looking at and making sure they're diversified in light of these, various cross currents in the markets from, macro to geopolitics to policy, all playing a role.
Well, Jason, very helpful to have had this touch base with you today, accounting for all that has taken place in markets in recent weeks. And it is helpful as well to have some guidance when it comes to positioning one's portfolio. So as well, want to highlight, Jason, your recent blog to our listeners and clients, that title, Putting Up With It, which ties into our conversation this morning. That can now be located up on UBS.com/CIO, though for clients of UBS, simply reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of Jason's latest blog directly. Though, Jason, thank you again for dropping by and do look forward to picking back up with our conversation in the week ahead.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, companies and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.